We are honored to have a member of our own congregation, as well as a member of our community and the representative of Israel to our community and to our city with us, in a sense, because he has to serve. He probably the most called upon man in Los Angeles right now. He has to serve as a one-man iron dome that is defending against incoming misrepresentations, arguments, and scandalous imputations that are increasingly directed against the state of Israel. And so I am delighted not only that he will be able to address us, but also for at least a few minutes that we will be able to ask him questions. The Consul General of the State of Israel to Los Angeles, David Siegel.
Shabbat Shalom.
I want to thank the Sinai community, and especially Rabbi Wolpe and all his colleagues on the stage, for providing me with the opportunity to address you today, for initiating this opportunity, for us to touch base with you, inform you about where we are in this operation, and where we're headed from here, and what we can do together as a community. First, let me say I'm humbled to stand before you. As Rabbi Wolpe said, this is our home community. You're our mishpucha. I know many, many people in this room. I see you several times a week, both on a personal basis and professionally. So it is very humbling to stand before you and to share with you the difficult weeks that we have just experienced. I was sharing with my family the fact that actually this is not just a three-week operation. This really began on the last day of school at Sinai Akiva on that Friday, June 13th, when we realized that three of our boys were kidnapped on their way home from the yeshiva to their homes for Shabbat 6 Shabbats ago. And basically, it's been an entire summer of trauma for Israel, but for the Jewish community around the world. Trauma that began with a kidnapping, a brutal, gruesome kidnapping. Trauma that continued for 18 days of desperate prayer and hopes and searching on the ground. Israel's security forces literally leaving no stone unturned, looking for those three boys until we unfortunately found their dead bodies 18 days later. The entire Jewish world came together in ways that I myself have never experienced, and I'm sure many here have never experienced. 18 days of hoping and praying. That was phase one of the trauma. During those 18 days, though, phase two of the trauma was already unfolding, because Hamas and the other terror groups in Gaza. And remember, Gaza is a place that Israel left almost 10 years ago and provided them with the opportunity for a better future. But they misused that opportunity when Hamas took over and violently subjected the Gaza Strip to its own terrorist aims. A terror organization became a terror government and began firing at Israel intensively for 10 years now. But during those 3 weeks in June, as we were searching for our boys, they began firing again at Israel. And they began digging those tunnels. And we knew that there were massive terror tunnels under Israel, endangering us, endangering our civilian communities, even in June. And by the way, many years before. But we knew that in June, there were terrorists inside those tunnels. And we had to take out one of those massive tunnels on July 7th. And on that day, they fired 80 rockets at Israel, more than all of 2013. That was the day that after 3 weeks of calling on them to stop the fire, that Israel wasn't interested in this conflict, that Israel wanted a peaceful summer for its children. They continued firing, and as we offered quiet for quiet, What we received in return was ever increasing rocket fire in its intensity, in its length, in its distance. We began experiencing rocket fire on Tel Aviv again, on the holy city of Jerusalem, and it was time to act. So phase two of our trauma was dealing with the rocket fire, and then we opened Operation Protective Edge on July 8th, and here we are almost 3 weeks later, 2,500 rockets that hit Israel. And when I say hit Israel, Hamas is able to reach Haifa from Gaza, not just Tel Aviv, but areas beyond Tel Aviv. And we had rocket fire from Lebanon into Israel, so that the Galilee was affected four times in these 3 weeks. And we had rocket fire from Syria into the Golan Heights. And we had rocket fire from Sinai into Eilat twice in the last 3 weeks. So basically, 100% of Israel's population, over 8 million people, were subjected to these air raids, alarms, something that this country wouldn't even allow one of, not even one rocket. So here we were with this trauma and the fact that the tunnels were being dug underneath us. And I can tell you, from the kibbutzim and moshavim and towns in southern Israel, people tell us that they could hear the digging underground, under their homes. We have to date discovered 31 massive, massive terror tunnels into Israel. We are now holding those 31 tunnels. We have destroyed over 50% of them in the last week alone. We intend to destroy everything else because the plan was to attack Israel from behind our front lines, tunneling into Israel, and each one of those tunnels goes by or under a civilian community in Israel. Imagine what would have happened to Israel, and it has been said that they could have brought Israel down on its knees had we had hundreds of heavily armed terrorists infiltrate Israel from underground, pop up in the middle of the day or night, and do what they could have done. I'll leave that to your imagination. Suffice it to say that we found in those tunnels handcuffs, tranquilizers, rope, heavy ammunition, and of course many, many armed terrorists that used these tunnels against us during these 3 weeks. This operation is just, it's necessary. There is absolute consensus in Israel about this, and very strong consensus around the world. This community has been affected. To remind all of us, when the three boys were kidnapped, we discovered that in our community right here in Pico was the sister of the father of one of these boys that we had to support, Lee Hishar, who is very active in the community right now. That trauma was a Los Angeles trauma. And now, of course, we've all heard the news that Max Steinberg, a member of this community, an American boy who went on birthright, who fell in love with Israel, who decided to return to Israel and to volunteer in the IDF, and not only in the IDF, but in one of the most elite units in Golani, and went into Gaza and was killed on the first night of the ground operation. And we had the tragic misfortune to announce the terrible news to the family last Sunday at 6 a.m. in a leafy, quiet Los Angeles suburb, to tell the parents that had never been in Israel before that their son fell in the service of Israel and the Jewish people. That funeral took place in Israel this week. As you know, there were over 30,000 Israelis that came from all over the country to pay respects to Max Steinberg from Los Angeles. Another 20,000 went to pay respects to another lone soldier from Texas. 50, 60,000 Israelis expressed their brotherhood and sisterhood and partnership with the Jewish people that day. It still reverberates. Secretary Kerry still speaks about it in just about every public opportunity that he has as Secretary of State of the United States. The Steinbergs are coming back to this community this week. The Shloshim for the three boys is this week. This community will be very, very deeply involved in all of the commemorations, in all of the coming together as we support one another. Over the last 3 weeks, as Rabbi Wolpe said, we've been dealing with a very, very serious campaign against Israel, of course, in the media and in social media. The pictures are horrendous from Gaza. Any parent, any human being would be horrified by these pictures. But we ask ourselves, stop and ask yourselves, and help your colleagues ask themselves, why did this start? How did we get to this place from a peaceful beginning of a summer to the summer of our discontent? Hamas planned this entire operation. Hamas tunneled under Israel. Hamas kidnapped those three kids. Hamas opened fire that day on Israel. This was part of a concerted campaign. Hamas booby-trapped Gaza. Our troops are telling us, and there's documented evidence that you can freely see online. You walk into an apartment in Gaza, the kitchen is in one room, the rocket room is right next to the living room. And you will find in that kitchen, or across the hall, rocket rooms, tunnels, arm depots. The pets are booby-trapped. The terrorists are using ambulances, they're using UN installations. The Secretary General of the United Nations is complaining now that the terrorists are using UN schools, where civilians are being protected right now, as military installations against Israel. So it is terrible, it is devastating, but we have to explain and fight and advocate for Israel like never before. Many people ask, what can we do? And with this, I will end because there's so much to say, and I'll keep my remarks short and then give you the opportunity to ask some questions. Everyone is asking what we can do, and let me tell you what you can do. And we stand in this holy, sacred place, Temple Sinai. The first thing you could do is be stronger Jews. Redouble your commitment to your own family, to Ledor Vador, redouble your community, your commitment to this synagogue, to our school, Sinai Akiva. Redouble your commitment to the rabbis that are sitting here and have to participate in all these events with us. Redouble your commitment to each other as Jews. And redouble your commitment to Israel. There are many things that we can do. You can fight on social media. You can respond. You can go beyond the synagogue and make sure that public officials in this country are as clear as the Secretary General of the United Nations. There's no reason why he can speak out and American public officials shouldn't speak out in defense of Israel's right to defend itself. Condemning Hamas for using human shields as a tactic or a strategy. We can do it politically. This community is so strongly connected to AIPAC. Redouble that commitment. Redouble the commitment to the other organizations. Look online, or we can help you find the organizations that are helping soldiers, helping their families, helping the fresh widows, helping children that aren't even born yet, that are now members of the bereaved family, helping communities in the South. There is so much that we can do. The good news is, unfortunately, that there is so much more to do beyond today, not just looking back to the beginning of the summer, because the campaign after the campaign will be just as intense, if not more intense, than where we are now. Remember the Goldstone Report? That is nothing compared to what we will be facing now from Geneva, where the United Nations there, that side of the United Nations, in a completely one-sided way, is attacking Israel for war crimes, is announcing an investigative committee. We will be fighting every step of the way against that, because it's an attempt to tie Israel's hands so that it cannot defend itself. There is much to be done, and there is much to be thankful for. Iron Dome is an American-Israeli partnership. That is your partnership with us. It is saving lives in Israel, but it's frankly also saving lives on the Palestinian side, because Israel can respond with restraint when its home front is protected. This is a very, very powerful relationship. And this, you, ladies and gentlemen, our friends, our family, are a very strong community. You're one of the strongest Jewish communities in the world. That strength means something. It means something to us. It means something to the Steinbergs. It means something to the families tonight in Israel. Tens of thousands of parents that are hoping and praying that their kids will come out of Gaza safely. Some of those parents are in Los Angeles. Some of them are prominent rabbis that raised their kids as Zionists, and those kids today are fighting in Gaza for the defense of Israel and the Jewish people. There is much to be done. There is much to be hopeful for. And let me just end by saying that in our rabbinical tradition, we always celebrated light and darkness. We celebrate Tu Bishvat, the festival of spring in the heart of the winter. We celebrate Hanukkah, the festival of lights, in the shortest and darkest and coldest days of the year. We should celebrate our peoplehood, celebrate our strength, celebrate what we have done for 3,000 years and what we'll do for thousands of years to come, together as strong Jews, united as one family and one community. Thank you very much.
We are greatly blessed to have such a wonderful representative of our people and of the State of Israel in our community. And the Consul General has graciously consented to answer a few questions. I know that people have questions, so please, if you have a question, raise your hand. Be brief, and I'll go ahead in the very back, and I will rephrase. Call it out. Loud. What's your question? I know what we want, what we don't want. Okay, I want something for you. Okay. I agree with you, we should be united, but I really don't want to take the Consul General's time. Questions, yes. Question, please. Go ahead. Thank you. Yes. Did Israel know about the tunnels?
We knew about the tunnels, mainly in our intelligence circles, for almost 20 years. There have been tunnels that they used to smuggle weapons from Egypt into Gaza. We've known that from Iran and from Syria. This is how they have those heavy, dangerous weapons that they're firing at us. They're from tunnels. You should know that the new government in Egypt has destroyed most of those tunnels, so that the situation is changing. And together we'll make sure that we don't have to go through another round like this again. But we've known about the tunnels.
But you couldn't, I assume you couldn't destroy them because you couldn't go into Gaza to do it.
We couldn't just go into Gaza to do it, exactly as Rabbi Wolpe said. We are now taking care of the problem. It will probably always be a problem. It will be a race of technology to find ways to detect those tunnels. You should know, these tunnels are miles long, 65 feet underground. That is like a 5-to-6-story building, if not more. 700 tons of concrete and around $1 million per tunnel. Look at where they have put their money all these years. We are working to destroy them now, and we will work to demilitarize Gaza, for the safety of our people.
Yes. What will happen after the war? And when you were talking about demilitarizing Gaza, can you say something about the Mofaz plan? Is that realistic?
What will happen after the war, and we're not calling it a war yet, what will happen after the war hopefully will be years of quiet for Israel. This is what we hope and pray for. Israel that you can all come to safely and feel protected and secure. We will make that happen. This is what we've always done. And we'll make sure that these things don't happen. We'll do everything we can to make sure these things don't happen again. Regarding demilitarizing Gaza, there may or may not be a ceasefire. You know that right now, by the way, there was a 12-hour ceasefire today, or humanitarian lull. We extended it by 4 hours. They opened fire again in Israel. So right now, we'll see what happens. There may be a ceasefire, and then there will be talk about what to do with Gaza the day after. What kind of economic reconstruction will Gaza have? What kind of program will the people of Gaza have? And remember, this isn't a fight between Israel and the people of Gaza. We provide them with food, with water, with electricity. We provide them with trucks, hundreds and hundreds, almost 1,000 trucks of humanitarian aid during these 3 weeks under fire. Israel is providing to the civilian population in Gaza. But as part of the overall package for the future of Gaza, Israel will demand that the Hamas terrorist group be disarmed. No more tunnels, no more rockets, This is going to be very difficult to achieve, and there will be many ideas on the table about how to achieve that. But when America repeats Israel's request and demands that the terrorists be disarmed, when the European Union repeats that demand, you start gaining international commitment, support, consensus to disarm them. And even if they aren't disarmed, it gives Israel the legitimacy to respond if it needs to in the future in its own self-defense.
Yes, go ahead.
Why in Sharon area they returned Gaza to Palestinian? Why did they?
What do you mean they? I don't want to legislate history. Why did Sharon do that in the first place? But yes, go ahead. Is a ceasefire right now to Israel's benefit or not? I want to ask questions about the situation now, if we can. I don't want to do history. The Consul General knows a lot of history, but you have to ask him another time. Is it to our benefit?
So we have agreed in the short history of the 3 weeks to several ceasefires. The problem has been that Hamas is not, and they kept firing at us. Now, if the ceasefire has terms that we can live with, that means taking apart those tunnels that are in our hands and have not been destroyed yet. They're very difficult to destroy. And if the terms of the ceasefire include our demands for demilitarization and for a process that we can trust, then it will be good for Israel. Right now, that's unclear. The proposals that we saw as of Friday before Shabbat were not good for Israel.
Okay, yes.
Should I repeat that?
Yeah, sure.
Is it possible to evacuate the population of Gaza so that Israel can clean up the terrorism that is there? What we've been trying to do, those areas that they're firing from at Israel, we've been trying to move out the civilians so that we can go after the terrorists that are hiding. The Iron Dome of the terrorists is the civilians. This is the tragedy of the civilians of Gaza. They're firing at Israel, at Tel Aviv, at Jerusalem, and at our troops. From homes, from hospitals. We've seen the footage just this week. They're firing from the windows of hospitals at our troops, from mosques. The tunnels are coming from under mosques. The rocket launchers are in or right next to mosques, let alone mosques, UN schools. They're firing at Israel purposely from those civilian areas. So we've been trying to move the civilians out to safety by dropping leaflets. You've heard all this, phone calls, text messages. We have the data. We know where the civilians are. We've been trying to warn them in advance before we go into a building or attack a building so that civilians aren't hurt. The problem is Hamas is forcing the civilians to stay or to go up to the rooftops. Imagine in America, the Department of Interior calling on American citizens to go up to the rooftops to protect some sort of a terrorist installation. It is something that is so unthinkable in our culture, but it's happening. It's happening in Gaza every day. So
Hi. We
can't move 1.8 million people out of Gaza, but what we can do is destroy the tunnels, hit back at terror in such a significant way that next time around, they'll have to think very carefully about if they do this again. And what we can do is affect the conditions the day after so that the demilitarization is real and that those rockets and missiles are moved out. They've already used many, many rockets, unfortunately. We've destroyed many of those rockets. There's much less left. And now that Egypt has changed, it's going to be much more difficult for them to import new significant rockets into Gaza.
I have a question regarding social media right back here. Hi. You had mentioned social media and for us to be active on social media. I'm sure most people here are on Facebook and Instagram. It's been overwhelmingly disgusting, the things that have been posted by a lot of anti-Israel people that are saying things that are just incorrect, ignorant. But what can we say? And this back and forth doesn't really seem to help anything. But what do you think we should do?
Thank you. It's a very important question. Look, back and forth is better than remaining silent, first of all. The most important thing is to affect people that can make a difference. And that means building relationships. That means reaching members of Congress, city officials, working with AIPAC or other organizations to build those relationships, to educate legislators, because they will be much less affected by the Facebook that they read than the relationship they have with you. We need to bring them to Israel. We need to educate them about the facts. And yes, we need to fight every day on social media. There's ample, we are putting out a lot of information in this campaign. The good news is that Israel is very organized in the PR that we're putting out now. Put out the information about the Secretary General of the United Nations blaming the terrorists for using the population and turning the schools into military installations. Use the video that we're putting out every day about how they're firing at us from these locations and the use of human shields. Palestinians that have said that whatever Hamas is doing is war crimes. Other Arab officials that are speaking very loudly and clearly about Hamas, including the Egyptians. It's all out there. We can use it. We can compile it. We can send it out. But the most important thing is to be proactive and build relationships with people that matter.
Okay, there are so many people who want to ask questions. So forgive me, we only have time for two more. One and two. Go ahead. Okay, is there something we can do about the news media? There's your answer.
There's my answer. Right. Look, it's not a level playing field, right? And Hamas knows that. And Hamas celebrates when people are dead on our side. We know that. They pass out sweets and cakes when there's trauma on our side. They also celebrate the fact that they have dead civilians to show the world, and they do that very effectively. And we grieve as Jews, as parents, any civilian casualty. But when the media plays into this strategy that Hamas is employing, we're only going to see more of that in the future. And it's not only going to be Israel, it's going to be anyone fighting terrorism around the world. So it's unfortunate, it's natural for the media to go towards the pictures. We need to fight it. One of the best struggles that I've seen recently is our ambassador in Washington, Ron Dermer, on CNN this week. Go into Ron Dermer's Facebook. Look at his exchange with CNN. It was everything that you're asking. And he said, enough is enough. And he simply started reading out loud the Secretary General of the United Nations statement. And he said, have you reported it, CNN? And they said, no. He said, I've been watching the show for the last 2 hours. No one has said anything about the UN complaining about the schools, and you're asking me why Israel attacked the school, which we don't even know if we did, because Hamas was firing at the school also. So we need to fight. It's not going to be easy. But ultimately, if you look around the world, you'll see Israel largely understood by the governments of the world, and Hamas largely isolated in the Arab world, and wait until the people come out from wherever they are and see the devastation that this organization has wrought on them. And we'll have to look at the day after to be smarter about this.
And the pictures, of course, when you say that the media is drawn to pictures, they're drawn to pictures if it's Israel doing it, but 1,700 were dead in Syria this past week, the bloodiest week in the Syrian conflict. How much did you see? I saw nothing. Absolutely. If I hadn't been listening to BBC radio, I wouldn't know. Yes, go ahead. Don't ask me why I was listening to BBC radio. Go ahead. It was a mistake. I was turning to something else. Go ahead. A little louder.
Is the Egypt-Israel relationship getting better?
Good question. Okay, right. Can you talk about the Egypt-Israel relationship and anything else about any of the surrounding countries that we should know?
Absolutely.
And with that, I think we need to wrap it up.
Okay, so this will be the wrap-up. The relationship is much, much improved. Egypt is fighting terrorism. It's fighting its own terrorism that is affecting Egypt. It's fighting global jihadists in Sinai. It's fighting the Muslim Brotherhood. It's not happy about Hamas. It's been very tough on Hamas, both in public statements and, as I said, by destroying those tunnels, really the lifeline of this terror organization. It's very significant. Part of the reason why this conflict is so difficult to resolve is because it's not just about Israel and Hamas. It's really a larger fight in the Sunni world between those countries like Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and others that are very threatened by Muslim Brotherhood. extremists, so that you're seeing a major fight between Egypt, the Palestinian Authority, Saudi Arabia, the Gulf countries, the moderate Sunni countries, versus countries like Qatar that sponsor and finance Hamas, Turkey, and countries like that. So it's a much, much larger fight. It's part of the ever-changing Middle East around us and the devastation that Rabbi Wolfe mentioned. 200,000 dead in Syria, 10 million refugees, half the country is on the move, either outside of the country or inside the country. So it's a much bigger fight, but it doesn't matter for Israel. The bottom line is we will work and fight for the security of Israel on any front, certainly on the Gaza front, being aware of the larger fronts around us. We have the Iranian nuclear problem, which obviously is foremost in our minds. All of this happens at the same time. This is why Israel has to be wise, just, careful, effective, and this is what we'll be working on every day. Just in terms of financial support, so as I said, being members of a Jewish community, support your Jewish community. And when it comes to Israel, support our troops that are defending the country through FIDF. Support the organizations that are doing the work every day, the Federation that strengthens the community here, FIDF that strengthens the soldiers there, AIPAC that strengthens the Israel-U.S. relationship. And you yourself, whatever passion you have, it could be a humanitarian thing, it could be supporting Israel and our work in Africa, or whatever it may be. Do what individually means the most to you, and we can give you the resources or the information about where to go to directly support our troops, the families, the communities that have been affected, and so on. So we are in this together. It warms my heart to be here and to hear your and experience your strength. You strengthen us, and hopefully we strengthen you. Shabbat shalom. Thank you very much.